Here's something I've been thinking about lately. There's a statement that I wanted to wrestle through whether it's true or not. The statement is, a person's future character is usually determined by their past character. Let me say that again. A person's future character is usually determined by their past character. Here's a couple of examples. You've heard the phrase, once a thief, always a thief. Maybe this other one, once a liar, always a liar. See, this concept that our character follows us and you can predict the future character based on past character, it doesn't start here in the West, in the U.S. It goes all the way back to ancient Israel, actually even before they were called a nation, Israel. We're going to look back into Genesis chapter 32, and there we're going to be discussing a little bit about what happened to this one person. His name is Jacob. Now, Jacob is an interesting guy. He was a twin, so he had a twin brother. And in that day, the birth order, even of twins, was a critical component of the future, what held into the future. And so Jacob was a twin, and his brother Esau came out first. His brother Esau was born first, and as Esau was being born, they noticed that Jacob's hand was grasping at the heel of Esau. Here, that's a symbol of what's yet to come. We see that Jacob, the word Jacob, means deceiver or grasper. Jacob is always grasping for something, for the next thing, and he never seems to be content with what he has. As I mentioned, birth order matters, and because Esau was born prior to Jacob, Esau was the older brother and the oldest in the family. The firstborn, there's some benefits to being a firstborn. In that culture, the firstborn at the time of handing off the responsibilities of family, the family dynamic, the family responsibilities, and also inheritance and that kind of thing, the firstborn would get the double portion. At the death of the parent, the oldest would get the double portion. So like if everybody in the family got $1,000, the eldest would always get $2,000. They would always get double what everybody else got. Not only that, but they would receive leadership within the family. This family would then rely on the eldest son to determine how they were going to go forward and if they're going to move and all of the details that were involved. And so with that became a lot of responsibility. There was a lot of responsibility on Esau. As we talked about Jacob was a deceiver. He worked hard to make sure that he could always be looking out for himself. It didn't matter what it meant for other people. He would kind of step on others and he would make sure that he would always be the one to come out ahead. Do you know anybody like that? Jacob, the deceiver, was always playing the game. Here's an example that we find in Scripture. You see, Jacob was a really good cook. He was like the sous chef of the family, whereas Esau was a really good hunter. Oldest brother was a fantastic hunter. And Esau, after he got back from hunting, was so hungry. He was so hungry. He said, Jacob, I need you to make me some food. I'm going to die. Sounds a bit like some teenage boys that I know. They're so hungry, they're going to die. And that maybe was Esau telling Jacob, I need you to make me some food. And Jacob, the crafty young man that he was, he said, you bet, I'll give you some food, but first you must give me your birthright. You must give me the rights to the oldest, and then I'll give you some food. And it's interesting because it says that Esau said, yes, I'm so hungry, I'm going to die, I'm going to go ahead and give this birthright to you. Just give me something to eat. And it says that Jacob made him some bread and some lentil stew. Boy, I don't know if I'd give up a birthright for lentil stew, but I must have been really good. I don't know. Jacob, he was a deceiver. He tricked people to do, and he did whatever he could to get what he wanted. You see, not only that, but as we fast forward several years, we see his Jacob and Esau's dad, his name is Isaac. Isaac is at the end of his life. He can't see, he can't hear well, his mind is kind of going a little bit. And we see the fact that Isaac knew that his last days were there. And so he told Esau, "Esau, go out and I want you to make me a meal, and then I'm going to give you my blessing for your birthright." That's a pretty huge example of the passing on of the baton. You see, Isaac knew that his time was coming, and the actual handing of the next of kin and the responsibilities of that oldest person doesn't happen until the dad blesses the son. Well, you see, Jacob and his mom got word of that, and they made up this whole process of how to make sure that Esau does not receive that final blessing, but Jacob will. Jacob did so much to craft this whole situation, and he ended up receiving the blessing from Isaac that he would be the next person taking on the responsibility of the family. That blessing was handed to Jacob, and not knowing that it was Jacob. And then Esau enters the room ready for his blessing, and Isaac says, "I already gave it to you." But Esau said, "No." And then Isaac knew right away that it was Jacob being the tricky one. You see, that bound the inheritance to Jacob, even though it wasn't rightfully his. This obviously created a lot of tension in the family. There was a lot of tension between Jacob and Esau, and Jacob was told by Isaac, "You have to get out of here. You cannot live here any longer, because if you do, it will be very, very bad for you." So Jacob had to flee. He left, and he did some amazing things. He actually did a good job of making enemies, which is not a surprise, being that he's a deceiver. Jacob continues to deceive other people, and we also find that he is now deceived by somebody else, by Laban. He's tricked into not getting what he wanted. I encourage you to read Genesis chapter 25 through 32 this week. You can read all about the story of Jacob and how he was a tricky person. Eventually, Jacob wanted to make amends with his brother Esau. Jacob lived in one space, Esau lived in another, and Jacob was ready to come back and make things right with Esau. The problem is that Jacob created so much trouble with his brother that Esau didn't believe him, didn't believe that he was going to come back. And so what happened was Jacob sent a small contingent of people ahead to tell Esau, "Hey, your brother is coming, and I wanted to let you know." And before they even got to where Esau lived, they found Esau was on his way to attack his brother Jacob with 400 other people. So now Jacob was told that Esau's coming, and Jacob's like, "What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Because I need to have the favor of my brother. I want to have the favor of my brother." So crafty Jacob, he sent bribes ahead of him to give to Esau. Bribes of food and all kinds of wealth and some animals and people, all this stuff. And he wanted to deceive his brother. He wanted to hopefully have a good deception that would then appease his brother. After all of the gifts were sent ahead, Jacob sent his family ahead right across the river. Jacob went back across to the one side opposite his family, and he built a little bonfire where something happened, and this is where we begin reading in the story of Jacob. Genesis chapter 32, verses 24 through 28 is where we're going today. Jacob, we see in Genesis chapter 32, verse 24, it says, "This left Jacob all alone in the camp." So Jacob is all alone on his side of the river, having this bonfire, whatever he's doing. And it says, "A man came and wrestled with him until dawn began to break." Imagine the scene. Imagine Jacob, you know, chilling by the fire. He's maybe whistling Dixie. Maybe he's playing his harmonica. Maybe he's making some s'mores. I don't know what he's doing around the bonfire, but he's all by himself. He's looking at the stars when suddenly somebody shows up. And then they show up and they start grabbing at the wrists and tripping Jacob to the ground. How unsettling would that be if that were us? This is kind of like how the show I Shouldn't Be Alive began, right? It begins with this kind of a scene and this kind of a setting. Now, we don't know what led up to the wrestling match, but we do know that Jacob held his own. He was not only deceptive in mind, but he was deceptive in his strength. It says that they wrestled until dawn. Now, I'm not much into high school wrestling. I'm much more into basketball. But I had to look up some things about high school wrestling. I found that a high school varsity wrestling match is 6 minutes long. And it consists of 3 2-minute periods. And in between those 2 minute periods, the varsity team has no rests in between. They pretty much wrestle for 6 minutes straight. Now, I've known some wrestlers, and them wrestling for those 6 minutes was very exhausting for them. Now, imagine being Jacob and this man. How exhausting would wrestling until dawn be? It seems like hours and hours is what they're talking about. I wonder what Jacob was thinking. It seems he didn't really know who his opponent was. Was this someone from Esau who sent to attack me? Was this somebody else that Jacob deceived in his life? Maybe it was somebody that wanted all of his stuff. Well, spoiler alert, this person is actually God in the flesh. We call it a Christophanies. Christophanies means it's a manifestation of Jesus pre-birth. Now that's its whole own sermon, which may require several, but we're not going to go there. You can look it up and discover that yourself. So Jacob had no idea he was having a face-to-face encounter with God. All that he knew was his struggle was real and it was difficult. Jacob's history was to get what he wanted through manipulation and lying and deception. Yet God was battling with him and battling his identity of being a deceiver. Have you ever had God show up in your life and challenge your identity? I have. Ever since high school, I was going to be a pastor. I made this determination. That's where I was going, what I was going to do. Eventually, one day, I was able to go into full-time ministry, and that really became my identity. I became Pastor Jesse. I took on a position as a lead pastor role. I was the top of the chain of command within the church setting. It was a respectable and honorable position that I was really happy to be. By that time, I had my master's degree in Christian studies. I was ordained in my denomination of the Christian and Missionary Alliance, which really was no easy task. I felt like I was prepared for anything. So I thought. More later. Verse 25, Genesis 32, verse 25. When the man saw that he would not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and wrenched it out of its socket. This struggle was a big matchup. You see, people would pay for a subscription to watch this on TV. This was probably better than Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. Probably much better than that. When this man who was wrestling against Jacob figured he wouldn't win, it says that he touched Jacob's hip. How in the world is it that this person could wrestle for a long time, yet dislocate Jacob's hip with just a touch? You realize that the hip joint is the strongest joint in the human body. This seems supernatural. Does that mean that God almost lost a hand-to-hand battle with a human? No, absolutely not. See, what it is that God simply limited his skill during the match. I remember as my kids were young, they were really young, I remember wrestling with them on the ground and them coming up to me and wrestling me to the ground and pinning me to the ground. I'd be like, oh, no, get me up. They'd push me over like I was nothing. In those times, I intentionally limited my strength to allow them to win. Why in the world would God limit his strength to make Jacob feel like he could win? David Guzik, he's a commentator of the Bible, he says this, God wanted something from him. God wanted all of Jacob's proud self-reliance and fleshly scheming, and God came to take it by force, if necessary. Also, James Boyce says this, how did Jacob ever manage to keep his struggle throughout the entire night? I don't know. But I do know that his determination to hang in there was no greater than our frequent determination to have our own way and eventually went out over God. We're the same as Jacob. If you've ever had hip issues, you know how painful this was for Jacob. Jacob was used to getting what he wanted the way he wanted it. But God had other plans. God knew that Jacob, his bent for deception was not going to produce for him all that God had for him. God had to break Jacob's identity in order to rebuild it. I mentioned before that my identity was as a pastor. That was who I was. That was what I did. Jesse equals pastor. Until I was broken. I stepped out of ministry due to pain and internal struggle within the church. I could no longer lead the church where I sensed God was wanting it to go. The problem was that if I wasn't a pastor, who the heck am I? I started working at Boss Snowplow. I worked on the assembly line, putting several trinkets together to create a part of the whole snowplow package. I worked third shift, which was 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. I think this is the furthest thing from a pastor that I could think of at the time. I'd build 10 to 12 of these portions of snowplows each night. I would show up, put my earplugs in, put my head down, and work all night long. Jesse is not a pastor. Jesse is nothing. I was depressed. Verse 26. Then the man said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." At this point, Jacob lost the fight, but would not let go of this man. I think Jacob realized that he was not fighting against another human being. After wrestling all night long, thinking you figured out the opponent, then a simple touch causes your hip to go out, this makes no sense. Jacob says, "I won't let you go unless you bless me." See, Jacob was used to being able to manipulate situations to get his way. This time, Jacob was broken, he was desperate, he was vulnerable, and all that he could do was beg for a blessing. Friends, what do? When you are broken? Do you find yourself eating a lot, shopping, stuck in video games, watching TV, taking medication, drinking too much alcohol? Do you find yourself doom scrolling? See, Jacob says that he clung to God. Friend, where do you cling? Does it help? Again, David Guzik says this. Jacob thought the real enemy was outside of him, being Esau. The real enemy was his own carnal, fleshly nature, which had not been conquered by God. You see, in my breaking, God allowed our family to come back to the Mora area. I'm so grateful for my in-laws who allowed us a space to live. I ended up doing a lot of therapy, which I call fishing therapy. They live on the Snake River, and I spent nearly every day in the river. I spilled many tears in the Snake River. I did some counseling. I read some books. I sought for my new identity. My friends, I was broken, but I clung to God for what the next step would look like. Because at that point, I was not a pastor. And if I wasn't a pastor, then who was I? Verse 27. "What is your name?" the man asked. He replied, "Jacob." What is your name? Which is, what is your identity? "Jacob," he said, which means deceiver, grasper. This is the deceiver, grasper. My friend, if I can ask you, what is your name? What is your identity? Who are you? Verse 28. Your name will no longer be Jacob, the man told him. From now on, you will be called Israel, because you have fought with God and with men and have won. You see, God changed Jacob's name to Israel. Jacob means deceiver. Israel means God rules. It took a long battle against God for Jacob to finally surrender. When Jacob finally surrendered, he was blessed. You see, oftentimes we want the blessing before the struggle and the surrender. Jacob surrendered, he was blessed, and God changed his name to God Rules. So I was broken and being restored, but Jesus didn't change my name, but my identity certainly has. My identity is no longer in my role as a pastor. I discovered that I am much more than that. I am a son. I am a husband. I am a father. I'm a competitor. I'm a preacher. I'm a pastor. I'm a builder. I'm a repairer, a fixer of things. I am a listener. You see, not one of these things create my identity. All together, they make me who I am. Jacob will not be known as a deceiver any longer, but as one who has God has ruled over. This is significant. But there's one problem. Jump down to verse 31. It says, the sun was rising as Jacob left Peniel, and he was limping because of the injury to his hip. You see, Jacob was restored and made brand new. His old name was gone. His new name had come. He was now no longer known as the deceiver, no longer known as the grasper, but was known as God Rules. But yet he walked away with a limp. Sometimes after we wrestle with God, after we plead with him, after we encounter him, we walk away with a limp. A painful reminder of the whole ordeal, yet grateful for his hand in our lives as we remember the struggle. Friends, I believe that I have a limp as well. My limp is not from my hip, but it's deep in my soul. Here's some examples of the limp that I have. I'm sensitive to certain people who seem similar to those who have hurt me in the past. I'm also much slower to put people into leadership roles. Maybe too slow. I also find that I'm pretty skeptical when someone is bold and tells me their gifts, what they are. I have a limp. I know that God has worked through these situations. And I'm reminded all the time of how he wants to use those experiences for his glory. So I ask you, what about you? What is your identity? Who are you? Maybe you don't know. Well, here's how you can discover it. If God were to take away the thing that is most important to you, would you be lost? See, I'm not asking if it would be easy. Of course, that would be difficult. But I'm asking you, would you be lost? Here are some examples. What if God were to take away your ability to see? Your kids or your grandkids? What if God took away your ability to work or even your ability to drive? What if God took away sports or your job or your home? Or your vehicle, or your money. Who would you be without one of these, the most important thing to you? Would you lose yourself? You realize that Jacob's true identity isn't one that he defined for himself, but one that God had given him. What if Surrendering our identity to the Lord frees us to live the free life that God so desperately desires for us. What would have happened to Jacob if he were to have surrendered before the wrestling match? Would they even have a wrestling match if Jacob had surrendered ahead of time? Would he walk away with a limp? Maybe not. I believe that Jacob's life would have been better had he surrendered his whole life to the Lord sooner than later. Friend, is your life fully surrendered to the Lord? Is your identity found in him? Or are they found in all the other things you do or you have? Will you surrender to him today? Maybe you've never given your life completely to Jesus before. Maybe you've been wrestling with God for most of your life. You see, Jesus has allowed you to wrestle and has reduced his strength just to allow you the grace to continue to wrestle. Are you really going to wait until he severely overwhelms you by only a simple touch before you fully surrender? Why? Why would you wait for that to happen? Because you can make the decision to follow Jesus today. Simple. Three words. First word is to agree, which is to confess. That's the word that we use for confess, which is agree. Basically, you're agreeing with God that you've done something wrong, which is sin. The second word is to turn, which is repent. It means to begin walking a different path. So you have agree, you have turn, and then the third one is to follow Jesus. Because friends, he's worth it. He is worth it. Will you do that today if you haven't yet? Because here's what happens. When you make this decision to follow Jesus, he trades your name out. Your old name might have been addicted or stupid or lonely or abusive or angry or lost. Those are your old names. You are no longer that. When you turn to Jesus, you are now found. Your name is free. Your name is loved. Your name is welcome. That is who you are. Friend, will you turn to Jesus today? Maybe you have trusted Jesus in your life. I'm going to ask you, where is your identity placed? Is there something in your life that the Lord is prompting you to give over to him? That one thing that's our identity, and if we don't have it, we don't know who we are, that really would become your idol. So I ask you, what idol do you have in your life that is placed above the Lord? What do you need to surrender to him? If you've identified something, begin saying this prayer this week. Lord, I give you all of me, even this. I ask you to bless me as I cling to you and not to that. Amen. That's a very simple prayer, but I believe he'll honor it. So I ask you, will you surrender? He is ready to give you a new identity.